the optimal life.
Well, I hope everybody else that's listening to this, Rick, thinks I sound sexy. So forgive me because I've got this cold, but I think we want to get through this. Like I said to you before, I wanted to do this interview because I've been looking forward to this one.
Yeah, same, man.
So let's start with, let's dig right into the serious stuff. My first question, what's your favorite scotch?
My favorite scotch is Macallan all the way. I mean, that's my favorite distillery. But if you're talking about like what I drink on a daily basis, it'll be like Macallan 12 or 15. But then those special days, dude, I get into 18. I've got 18. Some rare casks. Yeah. It's I also have some that I've collected over the years that are Macallans. One of my favorites is Macallan Edition number 2. I don't know if you remember, but they had editions 1 through 6. They did these annual releases. And Edition number 2 was a collaboration with the 4-time best voted restaurant in Spain. I can't remember the name of the restaurant right now, but Macallan gets its Oloroso sherry casks from Spain.
Oh, wow.
And Three Brothers run this restaurant. They did this collaboration. So in the Scotch community, there's a thing called a sherry bomb. And that's kind of what this is. It's just a lot of the sherry flavoring that's in there that it gained from the barrel. And at the time, those releases were like $100 each. But I see that one going online now for about $3,500 to $4,000.
No kidding.
Just because it's appreciated that much. But I tell you, they're like, oh, you should sell those. I'm like, no. I bought them to drink them. You know, and now it's even better because it's like I save those bottles, which are really now $4,000 bottles of Macallan for super special events and occasions.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool, though. I got 4 left of those.
Well, that's beautiful stuff. Macallan's delicious. Great stuff. What do you do any Oban?
No, I don't. Oban gets a little bit peaty, but I'll have it here and there, like an Oban 14. I'm not a big fan of peat, so the smokiness, right? So it's Oban's got a little. That's all good. Balvini I like, which also has a little bit. Yeah. Oban's a little bit more than that. But, dude, not the Laphroaigs, the Lagavulins. I mean, that's just like licking an ashtray for me. But that's from a different region of the island, too, you know?
Right.
So it's, they do different things in different distilleries in the regions. But I'll drink an Oban here and there. I won't turn down an Oban. I'll say that. I will turn down a Laphroaig.
You won't turn down a Johnny Walker Blue, would you?
You know, I won't. If somebody offers it to me, there's a thing with Johnny Walker, though, right? Because Johnny Walker's not a single malt. You know, whereas Macallan, Oban, Balvini, they're all single malts. There's, even though Johnny Walker, you know, is like a $250, $300 bottle, the blue one anyways, it's still a blend. And it still has about 20% of grain whiskey that's in there. It's a filler, you know? So it's just gotten this, it is smooth. You know, from people who just don't drink scotch typically, I'd say that's a good one to go to. However, it's not a single malt. And dude, I have a story for you. A customer that I landed like 11 years ago, still a law firm customer to this day. I was in the sales engagement with him, like, hey, you know, after we sign this, then we'll also, I just threw out like a line, right? Well, we'll all celebrate this and I'll bring in a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. And he's like, oh, no. There's no blended scotch here, only single malts. And at that, and I knew nothing of scotch at that point. This was 2012, something like that. I'm like, ooh, what do you mean by that? And he's like, you need to look this up. I'm like, I will go look this up. And then from that point on, I've just loved it. Glenlivet 18 was the first one I had. It got me hooked. Then I had Macallan, and Macallan's my go-to.
Isn't that funny how somebody that could have such an impact on you?
Yeah, literally.
That one dude, right? And you'll never forget that, because now anytime somebody says to you, hey, what about this blended scotch? You go, you're given the same thing. Yeah, it's not a single malt.
Exactly. And then I actually learned more about it, you know, and I learned what goes into the artistry of all this. And it's that's a thing that really got me going deep. And like, this is my drink for life.
Do you drink every day? You have a little scotch every day?
A few times a week.
A few times a week.
So it's maybe 3-4 times a week. It's not a ton, from at least from what I think, especially from a guy who just took a company public and is going through 2 simultaneous audits for that whole thing. You know, it may have increased a little bit over the last 2 months because of that, but typically 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, just a little sipper to kind of unwind at the end of the day. Yeah,
that's exactly.
It's beautiful.
I'm not pounding down 4 or 5 glasses, you know, because it's.
Let's go there. What is that like? I wanted to talk to you about taking a company public. You're talking about your IT firm Yeah. Reach Out IT, correct?
You got it, brother. Yep.
Okay. How does that happen? How do you go from private to public sector?
Man, it's been a journey, and it's been several years through this process. Cause I mean, they idolize it. I mean, on TV, right. Or in movies, to where it's like, or you see the bell ringings on different news networks, you know, when a new company IPOs on NASDAQ or NYSE, it's a long journey, and there's stages. Typically there's stages. Ours was started in 2020, and it took us a little over a year to get to the point to where we filed what's called a Regulation A, public offering. And that's where a private company can sell shares to the public. So you create a public pool of shares within the company to sell to just any individual, you know, and it's not on an exchange. It's not listed. It still is a public offering. Some people call it a mini IPO. So it's a way to raise capital to actually go to the next stage. So we needed to raise capital in order to file for our Regulation A, because that was about $500,000, bro, to go through that process. Then we raised money, probably about the same amount in the Regulation A. And then we went on to the next phase, which was acquiring some companies, which got us to the revenue point to where we can actually list on an exchange and actually have a self-sustaining stock, which is what we did in November. That process, and that's OTC. Right. And then our next stage that we intend to do is uplist to NASDAQ. And at that point, there's probably going to be a bell ringing, you know, and that's what most people will traditionally call an IPO. Is it this past marker of a milestone of listing on OTC was a reverse merger. So we took an existing company that was already trading, didn't have operations anymore. Some people call it a shell. Really, we call it a vehicle nowadays. And then you inject your existing company into that.
Okay.
And now you're instantly listed.
So you're listed on OTC currently, and people could trade on OTC, correct?
They sure can. Absolutely. Yeah. You get an account through an online broker like Schwab or E-Trade, something like that. Robinhood doesn't list all the OTC stocks. For example, ours is not listed with Robinhood. They don't pick that up. I don't know what their criteria is, but it's kind of like the Instagram algorithm. It's a little elusive. As far as how they choose these things, with OTC, we're actually still on there as of today anyways as YCRM, because the vehicle we used was Yuengling's Ice Cream Corporation.
So you had to use an existing vehicle. Some people will say shell.
Yep.
If you didn't use that vehicle, would that have prevented you of getting listed?
It would not have prevented us. It would have taken more time and a lot more money.
Ah, I see. So you have to go under some obscure listing at the moment.
You got it. Yep. And then all of our first filings are in, because we had our first 10K, and when our amended 8K is done, then we can change the name and change the symbol. And the name, of course, would be Reach Out Technology, and the symbol, we're trying to figure out what's available.
So what was the main incentive to go public? Was it capital funding? Was it raising money? What was your main primary objective?
Yeah, part of it's capital. There's greater access to public capital than there is to private, especially at the stage of company that we are, for what our growth strategy is with acquisitions. You know, we need cash to buy assets that produce more cash. Mm-hmm. And the public markets have that available in droves, because they can tie it out to pro formas and anything else versus private equity or whatever. It's a little harder, especially private banks. It's a little harder to scale quickly, because they're much more conservative. The public markets give you access to capital that you normally don't have. Now, while that's a benefit, of course, the other aspect of it is in my industry, I'm the first MSP to independently go public. The first of, you know, 200,000 plus companies across the US, the first small to mid-size IT firm and cybersecurity firm to actually go independently public.
Mm.
There's been some others that have been acquired by public companies, like Xerox, I believe it was acquired All Covered. They're an MSP as well, an IT and cybersecurity firm, but they don't trade. They're a subsidiary. You know, it's just like a revenue division of Xerox, and everybody knows Xerox is printers. Yeah, so it's kind of like a subset of that. We're the first ones. It's like, this is our gig. We're creating a nationwide brand for cybersecurity and IT management to help small and mid-sized businesses. And those that we acquire, as we're doing that, taking a lot of little companies, it's called a roll-up, and making it one big company, one nationwide brand. As we do that, we're able to private companies call it an equity role, but we're able to issue stock as part of the acquisition to these sellers, you know, instead of some cash. So it's like a second bite of the apple for them, because every single acquisition, clearly our enterprise value goes up because we have more revenue and more profit. It's simple math. That's right. The strategy of a roll-up. And then, of course, the stock price would hopefully reflect on that too, which means wherever it was when they sold, it's hopefully going to be double, triple, 10x. Who knows? I mean, right now the sky's the limit. Obviously, legally, I can't predict things, right? Yeah, I'm learning all that stuff. You know, I don't want to go to prison. But it's kind of a cool scenario for them, because it's not like the transaction, if they sold privately, it's not like the transaction is done right there. Whether they choose to stay on or not, dude, it's like I love creating this potential of generational wealth. Because if their business was 5 million and they rolled, let's just say 2 million of that 5 into stock, that 2 million could be worth 4 in just a couple of years when we uplist. It could be worth 10, 3 or 4 years from now as we continue to acquire more. So that's creating some real generational wealth for these people that would not have had access to this in the first place.
How, when you say MSP, managed service provider,
yep.
What for people that don't understand, I mean, you're an IT consultant. What exactly does MSP mean? How do you define that?
Yeah, you got it. Managed service provider. We would be more classified as a newer term, which is an MSSP, which is a managed security services provider. Because we focus, our primary thing that we lead with is cybersecurity. And then we still do the IT management, of course, as well. But it's kind of a side thing. Like, oh yeah, by the way, we also do this. Because we have to. You know, we started there 14 years ago doing just that before cybersecurity was really a thing. Then we added the competencies, added the people over the last 10 years and lead with that. It's a benefit because now it's a hot button, right? It's all over the news and everything. So it's like, hey, we're a cybersecurity provider.
Beautiful.
By the way, we also need to manage your IT because there's certain things that we need to have control over to protect you the best on the security side.
We have multiple manufacturing businesses here in Cleveland. And one of the things, and we're a defense contractor. And one of the things that we've been going through, I'm sure you're extremely familiar with, is CMMC.
Yeah.
We're going through our journey as we speak right now. For
it's
people
a
that
bitch,
don't know.
Brother.
Oof.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity maturity model certification, I think, is what
you got
that's
it, man.
In.
Yeah. And there's different levels, level 1, 2, and 3.
Correct. And we're in level 1 right now. And by the end of the year or early next year, we intend to be through level 2.
Cool.
And it is brutal. Yeah, it is absolutely brutal. And the government, you know, they keep changing the things and changing the directives and kicking the can and all these things.
Version 2.0 was just released like 2 weeks ago. It was ratified or something like that.
And now they're saying, as I'm sure you know, MSPs have to also be certified to certain levels. I think they made that directive now for 2026.
They do, yeah. Especially if MSPs are housing data. If you don't house the data of your customers, then you don't have to be. It's a differentiation, and that's because my industry freaked out 2 weeks ago when that thing finally came to.
Well, my IT guy was freaking out this morning on our call. Yeah. I'm happy you're telling me that, because they don't house the data, so that's interesting. Okay,
that's good. That's a very good thing. But you'll also need to check what kind of vendors that he uses as well,
right?
Or he or she, because if it passes through and they have certain access, then they would have to be certified for that.
Talk to people, give us at a high level, because you can go into the weeds with this stuff, but what exactly do you see? What is CMMC and what is the objective that the government's trying to accomplish?
Yeah, they're trying to protect the assets. And I know, you know, like level 1 and level 2 deals with controlled unclassified information, which means that it's, you know, it can be public knowledge, but you kind of have to search for it. So it's not just broadcast to the world. I'm sure that's where you're at, right? They call it CUI, C-U-I,
GUI.
Control. Yeah, Correct. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Level 3 gets into some bigger things, you know, to where you can start to deal with some classified information. I mean, we have several clients, you know, some that do the same thing. Some might manufacture parts for an aircraft carrier, you know, like the steel box that a control unit goes into for the navigation system or whatever, you know, and that's controlled. It's unclassified information because, I mean, it's a steel box, right? That's really what it is. But just like you and our clients, they don't have access to the schematics for the entire carrier. You know, and the government's smart about this because they distribute the information amongst hundreds of suppliers. That way, nobody has the full picture of the puzzle. That's how they control these things. what the government's trying to do, and rightfully so, because I was looking at this a few weeks ago. Because, dude, there's been cyber attacks the last couple of weeks, as there always is, right? A huge pharmacy goes down. You know, AT&T, it's still skeptical. And then Facebook, freaking Meta, and Instagram, they went out on Super Tuesday.
That was wild.
Exactly. Yeah. I was on Newsmax for that day. And, you know, they're still coming out saying it was a configuration issue. But it's like when those things happen, I start to scratch my head. Yeah, because it's how bad really is it? And where did this thing come from? Ironically, the biggest types of breaches that take place in the cloud are because of configuration problems. So they might be stating the truth by saying it was a configuration issue, but that configuration issue could have opened up the door for hackers to come in. And
right.
That could be what actually caused the outage to begin with.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like whenever that stuff goes down, like Microsoft had a big hit a couple years ago, and that's exactly what it was. It was a configuration problem. Somebody, which means a human, messed up in programming the firewall. Just, I'm dumbing it down, right? A human messed up and left a doorway open for hackers to come in. Yeah, so the government's trying to do this CMMC, the maturity certification, the model that they need in order to match and have a standard across the board to protect American secrets. Now, what's interesting to me, and it's not hilarious, it's actually kind of sad, is a couple of weeks ago when all this stuff hit, like with AT&T and the pharmacy, you know, and they were attributing it to a Chinese hacking group. China's been way ahead of us for years, man. And from a manpower perspective, it's a ratio of 50 to 1. There are 50 offensive cybersecurity or cyber hackers to every single one person that exists within a government intelligence agency in the cyber division. It's a 50 to 1 manpower ratio. So it's insane. We are so far behind. China's had this stuff going since like the early 2000s, and it was really former President Trump, and this isn't like a political message at all, but it's just factual, that we finally established our offensive cybersecurity division like 2016, 2017. So of course they're that far ahead of us. I mean, then you look at Russia and everybody else, so we have a lot of catch up to do, man.
Wow.
And I noticed that when I was in the White House in 2020, I was advising on AI border security, you know, and in the room, I'm looking around and you've got, you know, the top dogs from Homeland, from CISA, from the NSA, from the CIA, from the FBI, all in this room. And I'm sitting at the foot of the table with the deputy director of defense at the head of the table, got the company that I'm with and I'm sitting on the board of, and two special forces agents. And the type of conversations around the table, dude, was just mind-blowing. Granted, this was 4 years ago. I say it was mind-blowing because it was very much siloed. You could see that the CIA was very wary about working with the FBI. The FBI was wary about working with the NSA, you know, because of all these different divisions that there exist within our intelligence community. And the only way to help this out, which CMMC might be a good pathway towards that, there needs to be more interagency cooperation, especially when it comes to cyber.
What were those talks like? I mean, maybe you can't get into too much, but when you're talking about cyber, you were advising on cyber incidents at the border.
Yeah.
We never hear about cyber at the border. We just see them flooding in the border.
Yeah.
A
lot of the stuff had to do with human trafficking that we were talking about, you know, because at the ports, there's still the way they check crates, man, is still with dogs. You know, we were talking about technology to help detect shipping routes of kids, help detect in the crates before they even get to the border, who's alive, who's not alive, if there's broken bones on the kids. I mean, the tech is out there to do this, and using AI and machine data learning to find this out, because it's rough to think of it this way, but kids are currency when it comes to human trafficking.
And so you're saying that there's technology out there now that could track inside these containers that are being pushed over to the border and let you know if there's human people in there, if they're alive, if they're bones, if they're disfigured, if they're harmed, all those kind of things.
The tech exists. Yeah.
Wow.
Not being used as far as I know right now. And that was one of the issues, because it was at that time period, the vaccine, because it was 2020, as I said, right? The vaccine kind of took over the priorities, the political priorities at that time. You know, and I was even pitching, I'm like, you know, these crates, wherever they're coming from. And I'm like, you know, you, you could say that it's possibly from China, like in the media. I'm like, because that's a true statement, right? That it's possibly from China, and some do come over from China. Because at that point, it was, if you remember right, former President Trump always said, I mean, he had it down, dude. If there's ever an expert in branding, you need to look at that guy. You know, if there's ever an expert in messaging, you need to look at that guy. Whether you love him or hate him, it doesn't matter. His messaging and his branding is always on point. It's consistent.
I got to tell you, if you watched UFC this weekend, it didn't look like many people hated him.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I don't know if you saw him out there, but it's pretty eye-opening when you see how much love he truly gets out there.
It is. Because, and I hope phrasings don't get you shadow banned today, but my example is, like, remember he used to say all the time, he's like, the China virus, the China virus. He would never call it Corona or COVID or anything. It was always the China virus. It was a political move. It was a branding and marketing move, dude.
Yes.
Freaking brilliant. You know, so that's why I was playing to that. It's like, if you guys fund this, this will help sway the American people, because there's not a lot of love for the country of China right now amongst the American people. And it's even worse today in 2024.
Well, what's the biggest threat looming from China in terms of cybersecurity, Rick? When we're dealing with China specifically, where is the biggest threat that you believe for our infrastructure when it comes to that country?
Yeah, it is the critical infrastructure. We've seen it with things like the Colonial Pipeline getting hit. We saw the pharmacy hit a couple of weeks ago. The electrical grid is always a scenario. I mean, imagine, it's nice because of our geography that we have the two oceans that surround us. But if you take an example, like Russia's just as bad as China's. If you take an example with Ukraine, prior to Russia invading and crossing those borders that were established, they hit banks. I was on the news all over the place. I was talking about this. They started hitting banks, and millions of people, tens of millions of people on one morning went to the ATM or looked in their bank and they had $0 in their account. Now the money was actually there still. However, it was reporting back because of the cyber attacks from Russia that there was $0 in the account. So before a country like Russia will physically invade and attack, they can cause public hysteria through cyber via critical infrastructure. So it's very much psychological, and cyber has always been psychological. There's always a human aspect when it comes to cyber. If it's phishing, somebody's clicking on the wrong link, right? And then they give away their password. If it's somebody going to a bank, they see $0 in the account, they think the world's ending, literally, for their life right now. Mass hysteria and confusion before the invasion happens.
So that's very interesting. Let's dig into that a little bit. So these people get to their banks one morning and they feel like, holy shit, I have all my life savings is gone.
Got it.
Overnight.
Yeah, overnight.
So what happens? They start panicking. What are they doing then?
That's pretty much it. Because, I mean, they're regular citizens, but we're also talking military personnel. See the same thing. So imagine getting into the minds of the people that you're about to fight on the ground.
Interesting. So let's cripple them psychologically. They're going to have zero motivation to fight.
Right on.
And here we come.
That's exactly it. I know we talked about a cold. I'm getting over one too, so I'm coughing here a bit. At least I have a mute box. That's good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. But that's part of it. If you also remember right too with Ukraine as a good example, Elon Musk and a bunch of Starlinks over there, Starlink devices. Because critical infrastructure for them was also the internet. That's how their troops would communicate. Russia cut that off with cyber attacks. And then they physically cut lines also. That's something that we could see happen here in the States. And we have seen that happen from cyber attacks, like Cloudflare got hit. Cloudflare is kind of like a traffic cop. It tells Netflix how to get to your home through Comcast. That's kind of what Cloudflare does. So if you hit Cloudflare, which is the traffic cop, we call it an interconnect.
Mm-hmm.
If Netflix doesn't know where to find your home, you can't stream.
Hey, Rick, listen, if you need to, we can start doing a scotch right now. That always takes care of the cold.
I like it. I'm in for, I actually did that yesterday on a show.
Oh, did you? That's funny.
Yeah.
Funny. So, let's roll.
I'm going to text my assistant right now and have him get me a glass.
There you go. It. Nice job.
This is awesome. Yep.
So when it comes to then our I'm looking at the most extreme potentials out there. If China, Russia, or anybody comes in and hits our grid, what's the most dire scenario that you, like worst case scenario?
Yeah, if you're talking about the grid as an electrical grid, it's I mean, that gets into it depends on the time of year. You know, if I were to do it, I think this way, I would do it in the wintertime. Yeah, that's just because, you know, all of a sudden people are really, really cold. You get people gathered, you know, citizens gathered in shelters for something like that, especially if it's offline for days, and causing that kind of hysteria. Because we've got cities, obviously, that exist, but a lot of America, I mean, you think of the poorest neighborhoods that exist, you know, right outside the cities. And that's where a lot of the shelters happen. And I mean, in Chicago every year, you know, it doesn't happen, I guess not every year, like this year it didn't, but some years it'll get really, really cold. And it's you know, for a couple of weeks, that's about it. It's not like Fargo, North Dakota or something like that, you know, to where it's minus 20 for like 6 months straight. But in
Right.
Chicago, we'll get the cold days. And you always can see, at least you used to on the news when news was actually a thing that was watched by everybody, that you'd see, you know, elderly people passing away because they literally just like froze to death because they had lack of heat. And it's easier to do that. And then it's like, what do? You deploy the National Guard. That's what the US would do, or these different states would do, right? To help with these people. And now the National Guard is tied up doing a lot of other things. Cyber is really just like, it's the beginning of things when it comes to crippling a country.
Yeah, I
I
don't
mean, if
think
you,
people realize, Rick, you know, when you we think phishing, we think spam.
yeah.
The older generations clearly don't even know what that probably don't even know what that is. But when we think of cyber attacks, you think of clicking on a link and then it freezes your computer or your email inbox. Rick's getting something, one of his assistants. Hey, I just
Yep.
texted my fiance to told her bring me a drink
Awesome.
too.
I
So
love
let's
it.
see if
I
she
will
gets
wait for
it.
you, man, and we'll
Let's
cheers.
see if
Yeah.
she gets it. Maybe I can call her while we're talking and just say, hey, just
Yeah.
bring me something.
This is real. Now we're going Rogan style, right? We're just talking and then
Yeah, exactly. But you know, they don't realize that this is way, way, way more severe and serious potentially than a
Yep.
phishing hack.
What's the movie on Netflix right now that I think everybody should watch? I watched it just a couple weeks ago. It's with Julia Roberts.
I'm not
I'm looking up
sure.
right the there's The Great Hack, which is interesting. I watched that a little while. Oh, Leave the World Behind.
Leave the world behind.
Leave the World Behind. Everybody needs to watch that because it's crazy how accurate it is. And if I remember right, I think it's actually Barack Obama, who is one of the producers on it,
Wow.
which is
Leave the world
intriguing because
behind.
of Leave the World Behind. Julia Roberts stars in it, and Barack Obama, former President Barack Obama, has involvement in this. And yeah, executive producers, yeah, so they were at the highest level of this movie. And what I remember reading about it was it's stuff that he would like, they would theorize within the White House when he was president on stuff that could happen. And it's a way to get, it's actually kind of cool because it's a way to get the word out there on the reality of what some of these things can look like when there's a major cyber attack on critical infrastructure.
Well, and then what ends up happening too is that people then start to listen, you lose all your power. So then you can't cook, right?
Yeah.
You don't have anything. You have no heat, you have no air conditioning, depends on where you're at. So then you have to start surviving as if you're living out in the wild.
Yeah.
And after days, weeks, it starts looking pretty dire.
It does. Well, think
You
about medication too, right? And that the access to medication goes away. And I take a look at the state of the country. I mean, what is it? 60% of the country is classified as obese, and like another 15% is classified as morbidly. They're high numbers. They're really, really high numbers. But that also
Hey, babe,
tells
can
me,
you bring me down a little pinch of whiskey?
yeah,
Thanks so much. Take a look at my test. Okay, bye. She said,
baby.
sure, didn't even ask. Okay,
That's
great.
awesome. I love it. I
Anyways, I'm
love it,
sorry. Go
man.
ahead.
Yeah, but with the weight scenario, and this isn't coming from a guy that's never struggled with his weight. I used to be 80 pounds heavier, lost the weight about 10 years ago, and put on muscle mass. I mean, now I'm healthy, I'm fit, I eat right, I love scotch. You know, it's
Yeah.
I drink the right stuff, but I used to drink a lot of wine too prior to scotch, and that has a lot more calories, obviously a lot more sugar. And with the state of obesity in this country, think about all the people that have type 2 diabetes
Right.
that no longer have access to insulin, or even, you know, if they're, later on, you know, it's like you start to have organ failure, like your kidneys start to go, I believe, you know, later on with diabetes. And it's that now you can't go to the hospital to get dialysis. You can't get that stuff flushed out. You know,
Right.
so it becomes kind of dire, man. And it's I don't preach gloom and doom. I preach more so awareness, because we just need to catch up, because there's things we can do about this. But I do like this movie, Leave the World Behind, and everybody needs to watch it just to get a feeling for what actually is possible.
And it shows you what? It shows you some dire situations is basically what you're saying.
Right
Like
on.
if we're not protective, if we're not proactive, if we're not thinking about this stuff, it can get ugly quickly.
Bingo, you got it.
Famine, people
Yeah.
killing each other for food,
That's
those kind
exactly
of
it.
things.
You see that in the film too, because it becomes like different areas of the country against others, you know. And
Wow.
it's but I mean, if you're like, oh, that'll never happen, you know, I used to never think that, you know, whether you like our current president or not. This is interesting the way our conversation went today. It's like, regardless if like if you look back on January 6th, and I'm not saying anybody's guilty or not guilty from this. It's like you take a look at that, and it's like in my lifetime, I'm 44 years old. It's like I've never seen somebody storm the Capitol before. You know, I've never seen a situation at our border in Texas like we've seen right now, to where there's military personnel being deployed. You know, and states agree and disagree with sending troops to Texas to protect our borders. So
Depends
it's
on
an
what state you're
interesting.
talking about, right?
Exactly. You know, and when I filmed the movie a few years ago, Liberty Lockdown, you know, it was about the pandemic. You know, seeing the riots that were shaking down, and actually going to the place I'll never forget is Salem, Oregon, where the salon owner, Lindsey Graham, not the senator, but she was a salon owner, decided to stay open. And they were literally trying to kill her because they thought that she was spreading COVID or allowing the spread. And she had former military personnel, retired military, with AR-15s guarding her salon at night to protect it
I
from
remember
damage.
that.
And I was there like one of the next days interviewing her for the movie, and a pizza box gets slapped on the window right in the middle of the interview saying, "You're not a hero, you're a murderer. You will die." And like right in the middle is a death threat right there. And that pizza box was from pizza that she bought for the retired military personnel the night before for protecting her salon. So it's like I've seen these things in the past couple of years, man, and stuff that's even happening right now. It's like I never thought I would happen. It's like the Civil War was back in the 1800s, dude, like 200 years
Exactly.
ago. I'm not
Exactly.
saying it's going there, but
Well, hey, listen,
there's unrest.
I've said this, Rick, on this. Hey, you know what? Let's do a toast real quick.
Yeah.
Cheers, brother,
Cheers. Cheers to our country. I fucking love our country.
I do too. And to
Yeah.
getting rid of our colds too, by the way. Cheers
Yes,
to
right on.
you.
Cheers.
She brought me, I'm a whiskey guy. I don't know
I
which
like
one she brought
rye.
me,
I
but
love rye a lot too.
I love rye, I love bourbon, I love them all, unfortunately, I
Nice.
think.
Whistlepig is one of my go-to ryes.
Which one is your go-to?
Whistlepig?
Oh, that's
Yes,
one of my
sir.
favorites. Yeah,
Yep.
absolutely. Absolutely. I think I actually have some Whistlepig 18 rye upstairs.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I also love the 12, the Old World rye, which is finished in port barrels, port wine
Nice.
barrels. It gives it a nice little sweetness on the end, because ryes are typically a little spicier, you know?
No doubt. Yeah, I'll have to try that.
Yep, it's good.
I was saying this once on the podcast. I had this gentleman on who lost his family in the Holocaust, and I said to him, I said, you know, we used to always say never again, never again.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish. I grew up hearing about never again, and then I saw COVID, and I saw everybody doing what they were told to do by other people,
Yeah. Yeah.
government, and just telling them to
Yep.
get in line and march. And I saw all of a sudden, I said to myself, wait a second, there could easily be an again. They're showing it right now. Get on
Yeah.
the bus. Don't stay away from your friends. Just do what you're told. Wear a mask. You know, we're going to put you in prison if you don't comply. All those
For
kind of
real.
things. Wild.
You got it, man. It's insane. I
It's
know.
absolutely wild.
Where do we go from here? That's the question. And I hope there's some cool things that happen over the next couple of years. But you asked, you know, why the public routes? You know, and another side reason is just because I literally want to do something good for this country. And when people search up Google, because it's a, we're talking on a massive scale, right? At a broad scale, most of our conversation has been critical infrastructure, all that. But what the other realization is, like, when, you know, because our Chicago office is in an industrial park, and, you know, we've got other unit tenants that are next to us, adjacent to us. There's like 26 units that are here. And I remember it was about 2 years ago, the dude, it was some kind of fabrication company. I can't remember what it was, but I talked to him and it's like, hey, we're here. Anything I can ever help you with, please. And it's not even like a sales pitch. You're my neighbor. You know, it's like, you want to talk about marketing, you know, you need, I've got contacts for business funding if you need it. You know, if you just need to, you know, to unwind after a hard day because you dealt with some shit, you know, call me up and we'll go out for a drink, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though he knew what we did and he asked questions here and there, he never pulled the trigger on anything for cyber. And there was one day he came over, knocked on the door, came up to me. He's like, can you help me? I'm like, of course, I've been offering my help. You know, what do you want to do? You want to go out for a drink? You know, you want to go hit some balls, whatever. And he's like, no, he's like, I just had $50,000 literally sucked out of my bank account. And for a company that's doing like 2-ish million a year, you know, which is about where he was, you know, 50 grand's a lot, bro. You know, because the cash reserves are not that high for companies. I mean, that's like maybe a month's worth of expenses. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get cash when you're running razor thin margins too, like a fabrication business is. You know, they're razor thin.
They're in the single digit margins for sure.
Exactly.
Bottom.
Yep. Yeah. It's not like a cybersecurity company to where it's high margin, high profit, all that. Yeah. Manufacturing is single digits. But I'm like, man, if it's gone, dude, it's gone.
Wow.
You know, it's difficult. And I said that the reason I'm saying it's like, well, can't we have the authorities look into this? I'm like, dude, the FBI doesn't even touch anything under $1 million.
What happens to us? You use the example with what happened with Russia and Ukraine. Back to the bank account, because I think anyone that puts money away into a savings account is always worried. What if it's when I log in next time, it shows nothing?
Yep.
What happens? What if we were to find ourselves in that scenario? Can the banks be obligated to return it? I know it's a very broad question.
There's still FDIC that exists. You know, so if it was legitimately hacked, you know, which I don't know anything. Like, I've never seen anything about consumer accounts, like yours and mine, being hacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's just too small, man.
Right.
You know, for the most part. You know, but something like this, to where it's phishing. They give away their bank account password and then the money, they get their account information, then just goes away. The money goes away. They take those broad strokes, almost like an email campaign, right? For marketing, it's like they'll send it out if these phishing campaigns, but it's sent out to millions of business owners. You know, from a consumer perspective, I mean, how many Americans live paycheck to paycheck? You know, so there might be $1,000, $5,000, maybe tops in the average bank account. It's small. So the only thing you might see is like credit card numbers stolen in mass, and then sold on the dark web, which credit card companies, fraudulent stuff. Of course, they'll give it back. If you're talking about your bank account, always use your debit card as a credit card, as that Visa or MasterCard. Then you have the Visa and MasterCard protection. If you do debit again, the money's gone because it's just literally sucking cash out of there. So consumer wise, you know, if you just do some small things, I believe you're okay from a bank account perspective.
Right.
From identity, that's a different scenario, different conversation altogether. My assistant's calling me now. Oscar. Yeah.
You guys get to hear a real time talk with Rick and his assistant Oscar.
I'm still on the show, brother. You got me my scotch already. It's all good. No, Nate's over here. He had his assistant, his wife, bring in scotch for him, or bring a whiskey.
Yes.
We had a drink together. Yeah. You're like, I'll call you back, man. All right. I thought it was, hey, do you need more scotch? That's the only reason I answered.
You're used to that question, huh?
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Hey, real quick, as we're getting close, you mentioned, man, some of that. Like, when you look at AI, obviously that's something that you talk about as well. Again, that it's all ties to the same thing. We've had issues where, especially now with the voice recognition, where it sounds like you're getting a call from your mom or whoever, someone that you know. when the CEO of the company calls it, hey, this is Rick Jordan, guys. I need a glass of scotch waiting for me, and I need you to wire $100,000 to blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're talking to you.
Yeah, right on.
That's a real thing right now. Is that correct?
It sure is. Absolutely, it is. And it's there's a company that I'm probably going to start to work with here called Vocodia. They actually just had their IPO, the first one ever on the Chicago Board of Exchange, the first actual IPO. They do AI-based customer service. And they can you know, deep fake voices, you know, with your authorization. They take 500 hours of call recordings from you to create the model that's custom to your company, you know. And I believe in it from a lot of perspectives, you know, because I think it was Klarna the other day I was watching that they took, you know, the ability of 700 people, 700 customer service agents, and just didn't need them anymore. Because they implemented AI. So it's like 90% of people that are reaching out to Klarna customer support is now talking to AI, and it's actually getting resolved like on the first thing. You know, there's just that good. So when it comes to AI saying, hey, I need, you know, I'm Rick, I need a, or this is Rick, I need my scotch, you know, I also need to wire 100K. There's other protections you need to put in place for that. Oh, there we go. But it's a, you know, it's like a double check system. If you think back in the days for business checks where there used to need to be two signatures on a check, you can do the same thing. And we've got this set up because, I mean, we bank with Chase, but any bank does this, man. At least they should. You know, if you're working with a small regional bank that doesn't do this as a business owner, change that, because you should have thresholds for transfers, even between accounts, for wire transfers out. You know, I think ours here is over 10K. It's whatever your risk tolerance is, whatever you feel is, because 10K might be a lot for some people. It might be like maybe over 1,000, you know, I need to set that limit. That way there needs to be a secondary approval on anything over those thresholds, you know, and, you know, there's some other things like 25K is one of our limits, you know, because it's like, there's so many transactions that we do now as a public company, you know, but it wasn't that way to begin with, like 10 years ago, right? When I was only doing 500 million or 500K a year.
Right.
You know, 500,000 a year. That might have been more like, hey, any transaction over $1,000, we need to have secondary approval for.
Sure.
You protect those things using technology, but also getting humans involved to analyze those red flags as they come up.
Yeah, it comes back down to process.
Bingo. Always yeah, does.
Absolutely. Last question for you about the IT. With Reach Out, how do you guys differentiate yourself amongst all the competition out there?
Dude, it's the process, like literally what you said. And it's one thing that we do, which is I freaked out my people a couple of years ago. I love this. It was before COVID, and I said, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do two things. We're going to revolutionize our space, right? Because I developed KPIs that are very customer focused rather than internally focused. That's one way we differentiate. Is a lot of IT firms will be like, oh, we open this many tickets and we close this many tickets. Literally, I had an acquisition, a company we bought, had this gauge, right? This metric called a kill ratio. I was like, cool, what does that do? That just allows you to pat yourself on the fucking back? Come on now. Mm. Like, we're in the meantime, you got a customer over here that said, I had to submit 50 tickets last month. And they're pissed at you. They hate you. You need to track according to their pain. So the KPIs that we have are very customer focused. You know, how many problems did you have on this month? You know, we have a thing called top fives. It's like top five companies and top five people. You know, so if this one person exists in the top five, it's like that person had a hard week with technology. You know, let's give them a little extra love to make sure that they know that they're supported and cared for. You know, so it comes back to process, but it's shifting a perspective. And then the thing that I really mess with my people on, it's like, oh, by the way, guys, we're going to start showing our KPIs to our customers. Because we have regular engagement meetings. It's like, we're going to pull back the curtain like the Wizard of Oz. Be like, this is what happens. And like, wow, what are you talking about? What if we suck a week? I'm like, then we suck a week.
Ultimate accountability.
Exactly. Wow. We tell them we sucked. This is why. And I'm like, do we really suck that often? I'm like, well, no, we don't. I'm like, exactly. The issues that come up are usually issues that need decisions or partnership from our customers to implement action. So when we see your KPIs were off a little bit last month, here's why. And we dive in. It's like, oh, you know, Susie over there, she really doesn't know how to use QuickBooks. It's not a technical issue, but she kept calling us to ask questions on how to work Microsoft Word. Maybe she should get training, or maybe you need to replace her.
Interesting. That's beautiful stuff. The ultimate accountability is,
show everybody.
First of all, I love your approach by you're measuring your success based upon the pain of your customers. Really?
Yeah, dude. That's how you have to do it. And now we're public, so it's like all of our stuff's out in the open anyways.
Yeah.
So it's like it just makes sense.
Yeah. That's great. Like we've mentioned, Reach Out IT. We've linked that in the show notes. We've linked your rickjordan.tv in the show notes.
Cool. Thank
we've
you,
also
brother.
Linked your situational ethics book. And then finally, tell us real quickly about your All In podcast.
Yeah, man. I'm so grateful for my show. It's a top 2% show globally. And I say that because I'm grateful for the listeners. We've done no promotions, no sponsors whatsoever. It's just all organic. And it's cool because I love having people on, actually like you, if you would be willing to come on to just give your expertise and give value out to people and also give you exposure, because I think smart people need to have exposure.
Absolutely.
And that's how it is. The only sponsor I might entertain at some point would be McAllen. I mean,
there
it's like
it
a
is.
Bucket list for real.
Yeah, McAllen. McAllen, yep. There you go. Beautiful stuff, man. Hey, listen, fascinating what you're doing. Amazing line of work. It's really in its infancy stages, which is hard to believe, I'm sure, because of how big it is. But it's
when
so
we went
young.
Public, I felt like a startup again, dude, for real.
Yeah, yeah, I'm
it's
sure.
Like
and
eight
I'm
figures
sure.
in revenue, and I still feel like a startup.
Awesome connecting with you, and we'll look forward to seeing you ringing that NASDAQ bell sometime soon.
Thank you, brother. I'm excited for it. Come out to the party. I'll invite 1,000 people. You're one of them.